The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, so we're here because of a man, Steve Sauer, wanted me to interview you about your life. And what is your history with Steve?
I don't believe I've ever met Steve. I know of Steve from the show. He's gone by Steve from Dogtown, Steve from Chesterfield, Steve from Ballpark Village, Steve from Cheapskate Way.
Oh.
And we just know him from during the summer. He usually hangs out at Biggie's and his people watches.
What's Biggie's?
It's just like a restaurant bar.
It's not a strip club.
No, and it's a great place for food.
Oh.
But there's a place across the street where he'll just like order his food and go sit out and watch people. And then he will text in about what he saw.
Interesting.
And for some reason, he wants my life story, which I'm an open book. I mean, I pretty much talk about my life every day.
That's what he said. And it's almost like he wants some dirt on you. And so we're going to get that dirt for Steve.
I said, I'll just go whatever direction you go. Whatever you feel comfortable with, I don't shy away from anything.
Well, let's start with the basics. When were you born?
1957.
In what town?
St. Louis.
And mom and dad married your whole life?
Yes, happily married, Catholic family. So seven of us, three brothers, three sisters.
Where do you fall in the age?
I am the oldest male. I have two older sisters. Vicky, who is 72, mm-hmm. lives in Atlanta. Donna would have been 68. She passed away a few years ago. Then me, then Kevin, who is 1 year younger than me. Skip, who is 5 years younger than me. Stevie, who also, rest in peace, he'd be 42. And then my little sister, Kelly, lives in Orlando.
How did Donna and Stevie pass away?
Donna died of cancer. And this is something I never talked about. Steve, I don't know. I didn't ask. I didn't want to know.
You didn't want to know about your brother's death? Why?
I mean, I knew that he passed away by himself. He was in bed. He just ordered a pizza. Mm. And they found him like that afternoon, that evening, because he was supposed to go out and he didn't answer the phone.
Oh, my God.
So they went to the house and found him. And I said, I don't want to know. It's sad enough that he's passed away at like 32 years old. I don't want to know how he died.
Yeah, that's awful. That's too young.
Yeah. I just talked to him the night before.
So Donna passed away first?
No, second.
So Stevie passed away.
It was actually Donna who called me to tell me Steve passed away.
Wow. What year was that?
Stevie passed away probably 11 years ago, and then Donna 5 years ago.
Wow. So these are recent deaths.
Yeah, they were hard because everybody in my family is like my best friend. Mm-hmm. We're a very close-knit family. And Steve, we hadn't seen in a while because he moved to Scottsdale. I know we talked all the time, but hadn't seen him. And Donna really was my best friend. I mean, me and Donna talked every day.
That's lovely. It's good to be close to your family because a lot of people aren't.
Yeah, that's sad, too, because if you don't have family, you really have nothing.
It's true.
The way I look at it.
In my younger years, I was always closer to my friends. And then as I've gotten older, I've turned that into my family because I've lost so many years of like not being close to my mom, and my dad passed. And so it's really important to me to be a good sister and a good daughter to my mom because, I spent so much of my life not being a good daughter. So,
yeah, I don't know how good of a son I was. I was always in trouble. But my mom was always, Kenny again. They didn't know me till Iggy, till like high school. So I was always Kenny.
Why Iggy? Is that your actual middle name?
No, my middle name is Joseph. Catholics, I was named after Joseph. In high school, I've always been a classic rock guy. Mm-hmm. And in high school, I mean, when I was a kid, my dad would listen to like Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett getting ready for work, and my sisters listen to K. She.
Right.
So when I'm 10, 11 years old, I'm listening to K. She, And such as a classic rock guy. In my high school in Brentwood, there were two groups of people. There were the jocks, and then there were the freaks.
Yes.
The freaks were like, at lunch, they'd go across the street and smoke cigarettes, and the long hair and all of that. And I liked the freaks, but I was a jock.
You were a jock.
No, I played every sport.
What was your favorite sport to play?
I love baseball, but I became a rebel like my senior year. I don't want to cut my hair. I went from jock to freak. Mm-hmm. I kind of went to their group.
Could you be both?
No, because I didn't want to cut my hair, and there was a hair length on the baseball team.
So dumb.
So I got kicked off for not cutting my hair. I showed up at spring practice, and he goes, "You are getting that cut." I go, "Why? It's not going to affect how I play second base." Well, we have rules. I go, "Well, I'm not cutting my hair for baseball." I'm like, goodbye. So I'll
you're like out. The story of Dazed and Confused. They didn't
want
to sign
that. Smoke with the freaks now.
Yeah.
But I was into journalism. And so we had a school newspaper, the Eaglet, the Brentwood Eagles. And I wrote all the sports columns. And then because of my love for music, once a month I wrote a record review. And back when I was in high school, we're listening to Chicago, REO Speedwagon, Wishbone Ash, mm-hmm. Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And the freaks were listening to whatever they were listening to. So, and she's still a good friend of mine today, Sue Swanson, came to me and said, "You always write about your music. What about the stuff we listen to?" I said, "Well, I don't know what you listen to." She goes, "You ever heard of Iggy Pop?" I go, "No." She said, "Well, I'm going to give you Iggy Pop Raw Power. Will you listen to it and write a review?" I said, "Sure." So I did, wrote the review, and now all my jock friends said, "What the fuck, Iggy Pop? You're not a freak. What are you writing about that for?" I said, "Well, Sue Swanson asked me to." "Oh, so now you're a freak?" I went, "No, I just wrote the article." "Okay, Iggy." And they all start calling me Iggy.
Awesome.
So it just stuck ever since then.
I was hoping that Iggy Pop was in some referencing to that nickname you have.
That's exactly how I got it.
Interesting. And you also, similar to Iggy Pop, I've seen photos where you were shirtless often. Like
I wore
in
what?
Your younger years.
What did I do?
You were shirtless, like Iggy Pop.
Well, yeah, I had the physique back then.
Let's talk about your dating life in high school.
How long we got here?
We have 45
minutes. Oh, high school. That won't take long.
Yeah. What were you like? When did you lose your virginity?
I didn't lose my virginity till spring break of 1977.
And how old were you then?
I'd probably been 18.
18.
Maybe.
So senior year.
No. Second year of college, actually. Because I graduated in 75.
Oh, okay. So you're in college, you lose your virginity. To who?
I don't know. Some girl I met at the Elbow Room.
What was the Elbow Room?
Yeah, it was just a bar in Lauderdale.
Really?
Yeah, so outside in the car, actually.
You lost your virginity in the car.
Backseat of a car, yeah.
In Fort Lauderdale.
Lauderdale. The Elbow Room.
After the Elbow Room.
And didn't take long.
No.
Finished up and right back in the Elbow Room with my buddies.
And then... So, because I'm trying to tie this into where your hedonist tendencies and interests, and I'm trying to open you up and figure out what the lineage to the porno conventions are, because I think it's a very niche hobby or lifestyle.
Well, I enjoy interviewing porn stars because they're fascinating people.
Yeah.
The hedonism lifestyle really didn't happen until hedonism. I mean, I was kind of... In high school, I was kind of shy. I mean, I had a girlfriend, Connie Lassiter, my freshman year. She was in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And we dated through my sophomore year. And my first kiss was Connie Lassiter my sophomore year. Because I was kind of a mama's boy. Mm-hmm. And my mom would always say, "I don't want you in anybody's house if their parents aren't home."
Right.
You know, when you're a freshman, you don't care. But I did. I said, "I don't want to disappoint my mom." And I was actually dating a girl, Sherry Steininger, and she was kind of promiscuous from what I hear.
Oh, my.
But we're sitting on her porch, and it starts raining. And I remember her, because I was in her sister's grade, Shelley, and Sherry was a year younger. And this is after I broke up with Connie, or she broke up with me. Greg Bickle stole her away from me.
Wow.
And so Shelley was telling me about, she had a waterbed, and she goes, "Oh, there's a leak in my waterbed. It's going all over the place. I had to drain the whole thing." So we're sitting on the porch, and Sherry, it starts raining, and we start talking. I said, "Oh, did Shelly fix her waterbed?" Yeah, she goes, "Yeah, she did. You want to go see?" I go, No. She goes, well, it's raining. Let's go inside. And I said, is your mom there? She goes, no. I said, I got to go home then. She thought, great. He's asking my mom home. We got the water bed. I said, right. I got to go. And she dumped me right there. She goes, this is over.
This is over. You aren't promiscuous enough.
And I remember saying, all right, that's okay. Can I take your trash cans out for you?
Nice guy.
So, Connie Lasseter, we made out while Nights in Wysette was playing on her stereo in her mom and dad's
my goodness.
Living room. I remember it was so awkward. I just leaned over and said, kissed her. I said, I don't even know what I'm doing.
Nobody knows what they're doing with that first kiss.
No, so even then, and then out of college, I just went wild. I mean, the first time wasn't that great. I mean, it took like, I don't even know if I might have finished before she got her top off. I don't remember.
Right. Probably. Well, yeah, because like, explain to people who don't understand what hedonism is. Just kind of give a rough draft of what it is in a nutshell.
I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people will know this. I don't know if Steve knows this, but I was working at KFNS, and they had a celebrity closest to the hole golf thing.
Yeah.
Where they pick like 15 celebrities. I'm doing air quotes here. Celebrities, and they asked me if I would do it. I said, yeah. So and this was the lead up to a big thing they were doing that weekend with everybody, $10 and hole in one, paid $1 million. But we were just doing it to start it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I won. I think I hit it like 25 feet.
Wow.
And nobody else got closer than that, which kind of sucks, actually, but nobody else got closer.
That sucks if you're 25 feet from the
hole. Yeah, it's not that great. Especially with, I had to go first, 14 other guys after me, and it held up. And I didn't know what first prize was. First prize was a round trip ticket for one to anywhere in the world TWA flew.
Wow.
So I had that in my back pocket. So I started thinking, where do I want to go that I couldn't afford airfare?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, China, Japan, something like that. And then I kind of put, and then I found out how much it costs to stay there. And I can't do that. So I kind of put it off for like 8 months. And I remembered I had it. And by this time, it's like November. And I said, I got to use it by the end of the year. At the time, I don't know if you remember any of these people, but Ed Goodman and Mary Phelan were doing the morning show on KZK, and our studio was in their building.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to know them really well. And I'm asking Ed, I said, God, I got to use this thing by December. I don't know where to go. He goes, what do you want to do? I said, someplace warm with a beach. That's all I want to do. He said, we just got back from this place called Jamaica in Jamaica. I will put you in touch with their PR person and see what she can do as far as putting you up on one of the resorts. So I called her, and she asked me what I liked. And I said, I just like to relax. If I'm coming for a week, I want to just eat well, drink, lay on the beach, just not a care in the world. That's all I want to do.
Yeah.
She asked me how old I was. I told her, she goes, I think you'd like hedonism. I said, I don't know what that is. Well, it's our adults-only resort. It has a nude beach. It has a prude beach, but the people are great.
A prude beach?
Where you don't have to take your clothes off.
Interesting. The
nude beach, you have to take your clothes off. Prude
yes.
beach, you don't have
I've
to.
I've been to a nude beach.
So I said, it sounds great. So she booked my, she even got me a big discount, too. Talking like $300 for the whole week.
Oh, wow.
And I got my airfare for free. So I get there, and the first day, I go to the prude beach.
How do you feel?
There's like two people there.
It's a family.
No, there's no family. It's it's an adult resort. No
kids. It's an adult
no kids.
So there's two people. So
but there's like two people on this beach. But I hear all this music, this reggae, and people laughing. And I'm like, what the? Where are these people at?
Yeah, where's that?
So I finally said, what's all this music? Well, that's the nude beach.
Mm.
Like, well, I've never been nude before. I asked him, I was going to lay here. So I did that for one day. Go back the next day. I said, oh, this is just stupid. Just take your clothes off. So I go down the nude beach, and I get to the sign that says, nude beach, no clothing. So I, like, dress right in front of this, you know, lounge chair.
How just, are you feeling?
I was nervous.
Yeah.
I've never been naked before on a beach. I'm not shy, but I've never been naked around other people.
Right.
So I do. I just take my clothes off, and I just plop down right in this chair real quick.
What is that, like, was it liberating for you, like, after you got your clothes off? Were you like, I know you plopped down, but like in that moment where you're like, I'm doing something that's like the most intense I've ever felt, the most vulnerable.
You know when it got liberating is when I saw everybody else naked.
Yeah.
You know, the place was packed and I had to go get a drink. I said, well, everybody's naked. I'm just going to go get a drink. And I just, now I got to stand up and walk toward everybody who's naked at the bar.
Right.
And I felt liberated. I said, you know what? I don't care. This is so cool. And I have any clothes on. I can just walk around and nobody's saying anything. And
what do you remember seeing? Because I'm trying to really color that experience. So like, how many people do you think, are they old? Are they young? Are there erect penises? Are there more women than men? You know, like, what do you remember specifically about what you saw?
Specifically, I remember seeing a very attractive woman. And then I saw a not so attractive woman, and then a very fit man, then a not so fit man. And it made me feel nobody cares what you look like down here, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, I'm very vain. So, you know, if I didn't have a good body, I wouldn't have went naked. If I had a big gut or a small dick, I probably wouldn't have.
Right.
You know, I'm conscious. But I see all these other people don't care what they look like, and they're just free and walking around. To me, that's liberating. Saying nobody gives a shit what you look like down here. Everybody's just having a good time. And that's when I was ready to go. I didn't care. Now I'm walking around saying hi to people at the pool and talking. And
how close are you standing to these people? Like,
pretty close.
Right, like a normal, like if you were at a bar,
yeah,
you would
just a bar talking.
Pull up a stool. Yeah. Okay.
A little bit further away from the men than the women, but
sure.
I didn't want any touching going on, just accidentally. But so that was cool. So now I'm naked. Now I can enjoy the rest of my trip down here every day with the reggae and the drinking. And so I had met this couple. Mm-hmm. I knew nothing about swinging. Nothing.
This is day one.
Day two.
This is day two.
Day one, I stayed at the Prude Beach. But
gotcha.
Day two, I moseyed down. I knew nothing about swinging. Didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking to this couple at the bar, and they asked me if I'd join them for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hadn't made any friends then. So I said, sure. So we have dinner, and afterwards they said, have you been to the nude hot tub yet? I said, I saw it over there, but I haven't been in it. No, they said, well, that's usually the place to go after dinner. Everybody comes down to the hot tub, and we all just hang out and drink and relax after dinner. I said, yeah. So she goes, after dinner, we'll go to the hot tub. So we go to the hot tub, and my room is on the prude side. Later on, I started staying on the nude side, which is great because if I need to get anything from my room, I don't have to get undressed or put clothes on. I just go to my room, grab something, come back.
Mm-hmm.
The prude side, I go put clothes on and come back. And so I go back to my side, change, and get to the hot tub, get undressed in the hot tub. And she's sitting like on the steps of the hot tub, and he's like standing there in front of her. They're talking. Iggy. Oh, hi. So I go over and I sit down next to her, and you know, back then they had a tapper, a red stripe tap where you could get your own beer.
Mm-hmm.
They took that away because the staff and the grounds crew were getting drunk.
How do you know that?
That's why they said they took it away, because the people who worked there were just going and getting their own beer and drinking during working hours. So I just go get a beer, and we're sitting there talking. I'm sitting next to her, and he's standing in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And the water's only up to his ankles.
Oh, God.
I'm like staring right at the guy. Yeah, that was kind of awkward. I'm like looking all over. And I don't know what happened, but we're just sitting there talking, and she reaches down between my legs and grabs me.
Oh, my God. You don't feel assaulted?
I'm shocked because the guy's standing, the husband is standing right there watching and talking to us.
Right.
And I think we were talking sports. I think we might have been talking baseball at the time. And she just starts going at it, and I said,
oh, my God.
He says, oh, I'm sorry, honey. I see you got your hands full. I'll leave you two alone. I go, what? You leave us alone? He's your husband.
Mm.
And that's when I knew what open marriages and swinging was all about. And so I love the place.
So you
after
had intercourse with that woman?
Later on, yeah, while the husband washed.
What was that like?
That was freaky.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I didn't know what he got out of it.
So this has been a very long story about hedonism, about what it is. So it's free love.
Let me know if you don't want me to talk about stuff.
Oh, no. This is for Steve.
Yeah, but
wants,
I want you to feel comfortable talking to me about this shit. I don't want to.
This is your story.
Yes, but you're sitting here with me, so.
Well, thank you. So hedonism is free love, nudity, essentially just being completely fluid with the human spirit, it sounds like. Like whatever. Everybody's consenting. Everyone is comfortable. It's body positivity. It's, you know, do I have that right?
It's
that
almost
like,
all those things,
okay.
It's mind, body, and spirit.
Right.
That's basically what the hedonistic lifestyle is. Now, look, I'm not a hedonist.
You're not.
I go to hedo. if another couple wants to enjoy me being there with them, then fine.
Right.
And to be honest with you, I went for 18 straight years in December for 2 weeks. I went every year for 2 weeks after that.
To Jamaica.
Did I?
To Jamaica is where you went?
Yeah, I went hedonism.
The same place.
18 straight years I went.
Were there the same people over and over there?
It got to be because there was a group that went called Wet, Wild, and Wicked.
Oh.
Which was just basically just a bunch of same people go, and they just came up with a name. They weren't really wild people. And I go at the same time every year, so the same crowd would go. And then we formed our own little group called the Beach Loafers. There was like 20 of us. And we had our own little rituals at 2 o'clock. Bob, who knew one of the guys who lived in Jamaica, would always get like 10 cases of Heineken. And he'd bring it and put it in his room. And then every day at 2 o'clock, he'd ice up a case for like 10 of us on the beach. We'd have our Heineken little party at 2 o'clock. We had a little thing. We had dinner together and all kinds. But never had any sex with any of them.
Right.
Because they were part of my group and we were all friends.
You wouldn't have sex with your friends because it would maybe mess up the friendship?
I got to know them too well. And a couple of them asked me. They said, how come we've never hooked up with you? I said, because I know you too well and it'd be kind of weird after we hang out for a few years and now it comes up we want to have sex. I wouldn't do that with a friend.
So interesting because you've never, I mean, from what I've known about you, we've talked about this a little bit on the show. You know, you haven't had many long-term relationships.
No.
And so it sounds to me like the idea of investing in a friendship for so long and then having intercourse, you don't like the, this is my observation, it's almost like you don't like the feelings that can become attached to the act of sex.
Could be right.
Interesting.
Could be. And yeah, I wouldn't want to ruin anything because what if it doesn't work out and now all of a sudden I lost that friendship?
Yeah.
Whereas the other way, I mean, if I just have sex with somebody, it's just, you know, I don't want to get too close because I don't want to be tied down.
You have commitment issues.
Maybe, because I really, I know we talk once you think that just porn has ruined me, that I don't want a relationship because I watch too much
no,
porn.
No, I don't think I believe that anymore.
And that's not the case.
I think it plays into your interest in sex, and obviously that's what pornography is, and I think, you know, and I don't judge anyone for watching porn and loving pornography, as long as it's not an addiction.
I'll tell you something you can get out of me. I really don't watch as much as I say I do.
Really?
I really don't.
But you like to have the forefront, the facade that you do?
Well, that's what people think. And because I do go to the AVNs and interview a bunch of porn stars, and I know a lot of porn stars, and I interview a lot of porn stars. But, I mean, if I watch as much as people think I do, I'd be on the computer 15 hours a day.
Yeah. So you don't have a porn addiction?
No.
You don't have a sex addiction?
You know, I haven't watched porn in like a week. I haven't been on my computer in like a week. Catching up on Ozark.
Nice.
But I just think I think at a certain time, especially like when I got to Bermuda in 86 and I was still in my late 20s, and I had the freedom of having my own studio apartment overlooking the ocean. There was different families coming down every week that I kind of had my pick of the litter with what girls were coming to the point where these families were like,
what do you mean girls and families?
Families would come, but then they bring their kids, and there may be a daughter that's like 20, 21.
Oh, I see.
And
I just want to get the ages on record. It just sounded a little weird at first. Yeah,
older. I was only like 28, 29 at the time. But it was the kind of place where it was a 5-star hotel, restaurant in the hotel, and a lot of tableside flambés. And I tell this story, and people don't believe it, but I mean, if I get a family of like 6 and there's like 2 daughters and one's like 22, 23 years old and I'm making a Caesar salad for you and chatting with you, then I make a shrimp Dijon appetizer for you and I'm talking to you, then I make a steak Diane for the daughter, I'm making a whatever for you and talking to you, then I make a Cherry's Jubilee and Bananas Foster for dinner, I'm talking to your whole family. It's like they know me now. Where parents would actually come up to me afterward and say, Iggy, can you do us a favor? Our daughter Cindy is just so bored with us. And, you know, can you take her to like one of the hot spots, you know, around?
Right.
And
can
I would.
Date my daughter for a night.
We hook up.
Yeah.
They were like pawning their daughters off of me.
Well, I mean, I think that's the part that sounds a little strange. But as a former 20-something-year-old daughter on vacation with her family, totally normal to want to get away from the family.
Yeah.
And any cute guy at the resort, it's on.
And I'm basically, I know your whole family after cooking your entire meal for you for an hour and a half. You know, and you know I'm not some creep. I'm actually work here and you know who I am now. There's sometimes I would have sex with a daughter and then go meet him that day and bring the whole family snorkeling.
Hmm.
You know? So I just felt that freedom for 5 years of doing what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just worked nights. Some people got there and wanted to make as much money as possible. They're working breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right.
Like, fuck, I ain't doing that. I'm going to enjoy myself while I'm here. I make enough money working nights that I'm enjoying myself during the day.
Right.
I mean, I could get up at noon, go on the beach, or get up at 6 and go play golf. I had to be at work at 5.
This was the best time of your life.
Yeah. So I had that freedom where I didn't need to be tied down. And then I guess that carried on to the rest of my life where I enjoy my freedom. I never had a roommate. I live with one girl, but then I kicked her out because she wouldn't stop farting.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
It's gross.
Fart around people?
No, I said, come on. I said, yeah, well, we're living together. I said, I don't care. It's still.
This was a relationship?
Kind of.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, she moved in with me.
So you were dating?
Yeah.
How long did you date?
But then I ended that. Probably about a month, and she moved in. Again, it's too quick.
You let her move in after a month?
Yeah, it was too quick. Sex was good.
Okay.
Again,
you have sex and perviness and creep. These are all words that people want to associate with you. And it's because of your openness to talking about it. I think that's, you know, it's the hedonism. You're open to it. You don't, just as you were on the nude beach for the first time, vulnerable, going back for 18 years, I think that is a mindset too, where you're very, you know, if I can just correlate it, like essentially when you talk about anything that people deem perverted, it's you being naked on the air about your honesty about it. And it's faux pas, right?
I think you're right.
Most people, straight-laced, whatever, white-collar types, even blue-collar, they don't want to be open about their sexuality, their fantasies, their, you know, their fetishes. That's all very, in its American society, we've completely taken out sexuality. We don't even teach people about sex. Like, it's really, you know, but you go over to different countries and it's all out there, right?
Yeah, Europe is like,
yes.
They don't care.
So it's not, you know, I don't really, the more I get to know your story and like how your life has like had an effect on you physically, sexually, all that. I mean, it makes a lot of sense when people hear it, I think. Like you're not, to me, it's not creepy, it's not perverted, it's just honest. And it's like, that's your story.
Well, it depends what you consider creepy. I mean, you know, people think I'm a creep the way I talk about you, but
right.
You know, that's just, I love you to death. You're one of the coolest chicks I know. It's not creepy, and your husband is great. And you and Tim are perfect together. It's not creepy. It's just you and I have fun together. But just because I watch porn, I love interviewing adult actresses, that doesn't make you a pervert.
What are you so interested in to talk to these people?
Because they're normal. People think that a porn star came from a broken home and did heroin and crack and has to go have sex for a living to make money to pay for their habits, and then they get out of the business and they're broken. That's the case for some of them.
That their vaginas are gaping.
And so some of them they are. They just come in to make a quick buck and they're out and they didn't make enough money.
Right.
Or they make good money and then they spend it all on something, get out, now they're broke again. But there's a lot that I talk to that have college educations that just enjoyed sex.
Mm-hmm.
And said, look, if I enjoy having sex with a lot of people because I enjoy it, why not do it for a living? And Riley Reed just bought a $12 million home in Palm Beach.
Wow.
Lexi Bell last year made $3 million from OnlyFans.
Mm.
And she's as smart as they come. Lisa Ann, who you will meet at our Dotem in a couple weeks,
mm-hmm.
Maybe one of the top 5 porn stars of all time.
Wow.
She is the smartest person I know. She is a businesswoman. And she has turned what she did into an empire.
Do you only talk to female pornography stars?
No, I've interviewed Small Hands. Goes by Small Hands.
Interesting.
TT Boy.
TT Boy.
Lexington Steel.
Why do they have to have these weird names?
I don't know, but it's name is important in porn. We talked about that on Pepper and Genie. Yeah, all those stars I talk to, I say, how important is a name? They said, oh, very important. You know, do you think I'd be making the money I did if my name was like Lisa Smith? No, I'm Lexi Bell. So it's, but they have fascinating stories. And a lot of them have come from broken homes. And when they got into porn, their parents disowned them.
Right.
So those are also stories I like to, but I don't just go up, hey, how big was he? You like a big one? No, I mean, I think I ask pertinent questions.
Oh, very good.
And I get things out of them that nobody else does. That's why I'm probably the best in the business at interviewing adult stars.
You're the Barbara Walters of the porn convention.
Me and Captain Jack. That's pretty much the two that do this. But
what are the top five things about your life that are most important? We've talked family and sex. What are some other things? And put them in the...
Sex wouldn't even be in the top five.
No?
No.
With all of its history and all of the sex you've had and like...
Well, it's not really important to me. I mean, I can
it's part of your career, though. You do this
well,
for
it is,
career.
But that's only because I made it one day talking to Tim at a remote. I said, I probably banged 500 girls in my life.
And then he said, do you want to come work with me?
Yeah, then he said, well, you're part of the show now.
So do this. So tell me the top five things most important in your life.
Family.
Okay.
Friends. Work.
You love what you do?
I love it here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always loved what I did. I just didn't always love who I was working for.
Okay.
Not so much working with. I've always enjoyed the people I work with. It's the people I worked for.
Who on the show is your favorite?
I can't answer that.
You have to do it.
Well, Tim, because Tim has had my back so many fucking times.
Tim is, as I've gotten to know all of you more, I have a deep respect for him, and there is something just really special about Tim McKernan. And I haven't really figured out what that is yet, but every time I talk to him and see how he is with you guys together, it's just... There is something really special about him, so I can understand you loving him the most.
Well, he's the most loyal person I've ever worked for.
Mm-hmm.
Not only has he had my back, but he cares about the show.
Right.
And he cares more about the show than himself. You know, you'll have to ask him about it, but the most important thing to him when we had a choice where we're going to go is, I mean, he could have went to KMOX and took over the Rush Limbaugh spot. He said, I want to bring TMA. No, we don't want TMA, we want you. He's like, I want TMA.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to go anywhere unless he had his guys. And he could have made more money. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not many people that say, well, yeah, fuck that. I'm going to do the Rush Limbaugh slot and go to KMOX.
Yeah, it would have been really dumb if he wouldn't have.
Tim wanted his show.
Yeah.
And so he made sure we were all together.
That's great.
That's what he does. And he's always got your back to the point where if it's not there are a couple people that didn't get the salary they wanted. And Tim said, don't say anything, but just take it out of my salary to make up for what they need.
Wow. Really?
That's what he does. I mean, and he doesn't tell anybody. He doesn't go around blabbing at the, hey, I paid for your salary. No, he just says, whatever they need, just take it out of mine and just make theirs whole. Well, that's what he does. And that's why I love Tim to death, because not only is he the funnest guy I've ever worked with, but he just cares about people and he cares about his guys.
How much older are you than him?
I think Tim's 42 or 43, so 20-something years.
Do you sometimes feel like a father figure to him?
No.
Like you don't ever have that kind of dynamic of, this is my son?
No.
No?
No.
Always, I mean,
almost
just
like
friends.
A brother.
Brother?
Brother,
okay.
not son, but, you know, age is just a thing that, you know, every once in a while I think about, God, how old am I? I'll be 65 in July. Yeah, okay, keep going, getting all the Medicaid
nice
things.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm 30, so I don't really care. Mm. And I act like I'm 20. But it's every once in a while I think to myself, you know, God, I'm going to be 65 years old and I'm still doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been doing it for 30 years. And at what point do you have to stop being a kid, you know, and actually act like an adult?
Right.
Which on the air, I really don't act like an adult. I act like a kid, you know. I mean, I don't know any other 65 guys doing radio that say the shit I do on the radio.
No, I don't either.
No. So what point do I say, you know, do I have to grow up? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, what is your plan? What's your 10-year plan here?
I have no 10-year plan.
You don't have a plan?
I can't retire.
Why?
I don't have the money.
Do you not have an IRA?
I have nothing. I didn't got a 401k when I worked here. I started working here, but
you've never had a 401k before?
I did, but it was so long ago and so short period of time that it was gone by the time I might have even cashed it out for like $600 or something. I don't know.
Hmm.
And that was the only time that any place I worked had a 401k.
Do you worry about that?
Not really.
Like, who's going to take care of you when you're decrepit? Because we all get decrepit. We all age.
Yeah, we do.
Our bodies break down.
I'm sure my little sister Kelly will say, hey, move in with us in Orlando. I mean, Allie and Peyton are in college now, so they're pretty much out.
Those are your nieces?
Yeah. Allie just will start Central Florida next year, and Peyton is going to be a sophomore at Tennessee.
What is Uncle Iggy like? What is? Tell me about that dynamic.
Iggy is a great uncle. Everybody,
how so?
Everybody says Uncle Iggy's our favorite.
Why?
Because I love him and I do anything for him. And I, whenever I go over to somebody's house, it's always Uncle Iggy. Can we play this? Let's go kick the soccer ball. Let's go. I never say, leave me alone. No, I'm always there. My Christmas presents are always great.
You are a great gift giver.
I put thought into it, I love my. I have like 24 of them, so I have. I'm always around. Now the ones out of town, I don't see that often, mm-hmm. but the ones in town, I'm always there. And it's, I love my family, so I'm always there if they need anything to babysit or let's go have lunch and bring mm-hmm. the kids. And so it's just, I'm a good uncle.
Do they listen to you on the radio?
My niece Jessica does. And
what does she think about your lifestyle?
I don't really talk that much about it.
She doesn't hear some of the stories and
I'm sure
up.
She does, but she doesn't care. Mm. Now I will tell her now because she'll take the kids to school and put it on in the car. And I said, now if you're going to listen, text me and say we have the radio on in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll make sure I don't say anything.
Right.
But I'll always say hi to my niece is listening. Hey, Jess. Hey, Isaac. Hey, Em. How you doing? They get a kick out of their uncle saying hi to them on the radio.
Yeah, of course.
But I had my sister Donna, who I talked about earlier. As close as we were,
mm-hmm.
there were times when I was back doing Kegler's Corner, this bowling show I did for like 20 years, the talk of the town. And we had been doing it for like Thursday night for like 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we ended up switching to Saturday morning and Sunday morning, but for like 8 straight years was Thursday night. And it was a Thursday night or whatever. She texted me in the middle of the show and said, oh, my God, are you watching Hell's Kitchen? I said, I've been doing this show at the same time for 10 years.
Wow.
You still don't know I do this show on Thursday night? Now, my family, a lot of them don't listen.
Yeah.
But I don't blame them.
Okay, so family, friends, your career, two more things about your life that you love that are important to you.
Freedom.
What does that mean, like your freedom?
To do what I want to do, and I think that's the reason that I've probably stayed single forever, because I enjoy going home and whether I want to put on the stereo,
mm-hmm.
2 o'clock and listen to you.
Nice.
Listen to put on an album, plop down and binge watch, 9 hours of, whatever show,
mm-hmm.
Cook dinner, enjoy dinner by myself, don't have to talk, I can watch TV while I eat, go sit on my patio in the summer and pour a scotch or open a bottle of wine and just relax. Without somebody next to me. Are we going out? What do you want to do? I don't want to talk. I want to sit here and relax. I really don't want to say anything. I've gotten used to that.
Right.
And if I had a girlfriend, even if I fell in love, it's like, I don't want to go out. I just want to sit here and watch TV, and I really don't want you to talk.
Wow.
I'm not being mean, because I think I'm a very friendly person. Caring person. But when it comes to that, when it comes to my privacy, just wanting to veg out and do nothing, that would be annoying. Do you think dinner was good? I don't want to talk. I just want to watch TV.
Yeah, you don't want to be on.
Yeah. And I don't want that to come across as mean. That's why I don't have any relationships. But I just enjoy my privacy. Now, there's times I love having people over.
Right.
There's times I'll say, hey, I do feel like just, drinking tonight and having some people on the patio. Let's mm-hmm. come over and bullshit. But I can do that when I want.
Right.
I don't want to have a girl that says, I don't want to go out. I'm just going to have some girlfriends over. We're going to sit out there and I want to go to bed. I don't want to hear you out there cackling while I'm sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that problem if I don't have somebody to worry about that.
Yes.
So I do believe that's why I've stayed single all these years, because I enjoy being by myself.
So it's a voluntary choice to be single.
Yes, I've said my perfect theme song would be John Mayer's Perfectly Lonely. I mean,
that's your theme song.
I love being by myself. I really do. Now, there's
You're
times
an introvert.
I love being. There's other times I want to be around people.
Right.
You know, if I'm in a certain mood where, you know, I'll tell you when it's. I really like being around people. It's after the holidays.
Why is that?
And that's when it gets me, because you go spend that entire Christmas day with your family, and you have, you know, the ones that live in town. You have your brother and sister and your sister-in-law, your brother-in-law, your 15 nieces. You're all just playing and talking. And then I go home, and I think to myself, now they're all home. You know, they just opened presents and had a good day. Now they're all sitting on the couch talking about Christmas and watching TV and having hot chocolate. I'm fucking sitting here by myself on the couch.
Yeah.
That's when it hits me. That's when I want to be around people.
Interesting.
But that's when I want to be around people.
Right.
I'm not forced to be around people. So.
You want a beck and call family.
Well, I do have that. I mean, I can go over to my family's house whenever I want and
hang
out. No,
I mean, but like, if you could have it your way, you would have a person that you could be in love with, female, possibly some kids, but you wouldn't want them there all the time. You just, like, when you were feeling like being a family man and having a relationship, then you would have it. Like, if that was an option, which it's not, because that would be,
and I also know that's not fair to the person,
right,
the female, so I would never do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, if I was in love with her, I'd care for her enough to not put her in that situation.
Right.
So maybe, again, that's why I don't do it, because I have feelings for her. I don't like to be mean or come across as mean to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I come across that way on the air.
Really?
But I tell people that. You know, if I tell somebody, I said, dumbass, you know, I hope they know that I'm not like that in real life.
I don't think anybody's judging. I mean, look at everybody on that show. You know what I'm saying? Like, Doug says things, Tim says things, you know, Plow. But everybody has their opinion and their moment of weakness where they get frustrated with something. Like, that's just human. Like, we all, you know, if you call somebody a dumbass, everybody's done that.
Yeah, and those same people I'll have a beer with at a TMA Live event.
Right.
But for people that don't really know me, and I see a couple that are mean-spirited, that actually think that's me in real life. And
mm-hmm.
You're just a jack-off. You're such a dick on the air. You talk
God.
About people. I'm like, well, have you ever met me? At the next time we're out, just come say hi. I'll buy you a beer. We'll talk. I'm not the same person.
People get a perception of what they hear. They think they have radio personalities figured out. I think that's part of job, unfortunately.
And there's some people that are jealous of my lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, okay, now we have family, friends, career, freedom. What is that fifth thing that's important to you? Is your health important to you?
Well, I think it's important to everybody, but I don't really worry about it.
Do you worry about dying?
I don't worry about dying. I kind of think about how I'll die.
Yeah, I think about that too.
You know, I don't want to be like in a bed in pain for 6 months.
Right. Who's texting you?
Yeah. I forgot to turn my phone off. Sorry, Tommy. Tommy told me to turn my phone off. Yeah, so I don't worry about dying. Everybody dies.
What do you think happens when we die?
That's an interesting question. I was thinking about that the other day. I don't push religion on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm Catholic, and I'm not a practicing Catholic. I don't go to church.
Ways are you Catholic?
Pardon me?
In what ways are you Catholic, then?
I pray every night.
Okay. You do as I lay me down to sleep prayer?
No, I have my own thing.
Okay.
Just asking God to say hi to my family up there and watch over my friends, watch over me. Please get rid of COVID.
Yeah.
Just things like that. Not really stuff for myself, but for others. And I think it's a Catholic thing that if you don't believe in God, what happens if there is a God and you're fucked when you die?
Do you think God would say that, though, to the people that don't believe?
Well, you don't know, because you know, if you listen, you read the Bible, which I've never read the Bible. And people tell me about the Bible. I never read it.
Okay, can I just say, you're just calling, like, it sounds like you were baptized, you did communion, you probably have your Catholic Joseph middle name, but in no other way are you practicing Catholicism, right?
No, I don't go to church.
Okay.
I don't believe in church. Church has become so commercial that all of church is just asking you for more money.
Mm.
And I don't need that. I can pray at home. I don't need to sit there and do it.
So back to God. God, you, what do you think happens in the Bible?
Well, I'm hoping that when I die, I get to go see my family in heaven. I get to see, I don't know how that works. You know, I just float up and but they're waiting for me. And, hey, I don't know. I'm not making fun of it. I really don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I would say the majority of Catholic people are afraid not to believe in God because they want to think that once they die, they get to see their family and they get to go someplace nice for the rest of their eternal life and be with their family and friends and have no more pain. And I think that's why Catholic people want to believe that.
Sure.
And it doesn't hurt anything. And I was thinking that, you know, for the people that aren't Catholic or agnostic or even atheist who don't believe in it, like you, but you don't go after people who talk about their religion. There are people that push, that get pissed off. Don't push your religion on me, blah, blah, blah. Those are the people that it doesn't, I don't know why it hurts you. If you don't believe in God, fine. But if there's a God, I'm going to heaven and you're going to say, God, I wish I'd have believed him because I'm nowhere.
Right.
But I'm with you. I think if God is as loving as people say, he's going to bring everybody up there. Whether you believe in him or not, he's going to bring you up there.
I was raised Catholic. I've never been baptized. And I became agnostic in high school. And then now I'm in this other part of my spirituality and beliefs where it's almost like I'm the reverse agnostic, where I believe everything. Where I go, it's all, everybody, yeah, every Allah, you know, Buddha, Jesus, they're all real, Muhammad, like everything, you know, Satan, I believe all of it. And I go, it's all real. Because to me, that awakened something in me where I go, I'm not going to say none of it exists because I don't believe that. I'm not an atheist. And my agnostic, I was a positive agnostic, which meant I don't have it figured out.
Yeah.
But I do believe everything that everybody else believes. I believe it all happened. And I believe that it's all relevant. And so, but, you know, so my whole belief system is I essentially just opened the door to the barn and I was like, it all can fucking happen.
Let me know.
Yeah. And I think that my relationship with God and prayer and gratitude and stuff, it's in a really healthy place for myself. But I still have always wanted to be a part of something to, like, because for instance, like whenever I get afraid and I'm having like those nights where I'm like full of dread and I'm just like, oh my God, like what's this fucking world coming to? I don't have something to connect to that soothes me. And that's the thing that I wish I had so badly, and I just don't. So do you have that? Do you have
I do.
That comfort?
After I pray, that's good. I feel at ease. I feel like he's watching me. I mean, there's times when I prayed for something. I said, if it's in your will. I said, I'm not, you know, hey, I got a cold, make my cold go away. I don't pray for shit for myself. But there's been times I've prayed for things and they've turned out the way. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. When COVID was really bad, and I would be at work and somebody tested positive who I knew I was around. I would just pray that night. I said, just God, please let him get better and please don't let me get it.
Yeah.
And I tested negative. So whether, was it so because of my prayer? I don't know, but that's why I do it. And I felt at ease after I did it. I said, you know, if I get it, I get it. But he's watching over me, so.
Right.
If he wants to take care of me, I'm not going to get it. And I didn't get it. But
you have not gotten COVID yet?
I have not. I don't think that's wood, but now that is. But no, it's just, and I never talk religion. I mean, you can't win talking religion. It's just like talking race, religion. There's certain topics you can't win. So, I mean, I know that I pray. I know that I believe in God. But other than that, I don't go to church. I don't go off on people who don't believe in God. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, to each their own. I mean, Who is to say that there is a God, but there is no Allah? That you don't have your God. My God is the only one. You know, you believe in that. That's as long as you believe in something. So that's the extent of my religion. We all die. And if there is a God, I'm going to see my family. If there isn't a God, I'm dead. I'm not going to know anyway.
Mm.
So it's.
I think it's all energy. I think that after we pass, we don't even it just goes somewhere else. Like, we go somewhere else. And maybe it's heaven. Maybe it's into some a cat. Yeah. Maybe it's just the air. You become the air. I don't know. But I it's hard to imagine that.
This is it. There's got to be something more than.
There has to be something
I
more
agree
than
with
this
that.
Shit.
yeah, there's got to be something better than this when we leave this earth. But
well, in closing.
I didn't even give you a five, did I?
Well, did you? Health?
I couldn't think of a five.
Spirituality? I mean, it's all kind of roped
in. I guess that can be five because I do believe in prayer, and I do believe if somebody's sick, I always, God, please let them get better. Mm. Or
you care deeply for other
when
people.
When you had COVID, I prayed that.
You did?
Please let Lauren get better soon.
It was awful.
Anybody who I know that is sick or has problems or just got fired, please let them find a job.
That's
you
nice.
Know, I always do that, but.
You're a nice guy.
I try to be. I think
Steve's going to be disappointed with this interview because.
I've given him nothing.
Yeah, I mean, give him something. What is something that people need to, that you would hate for a Steve to know? He's paying money, hardcore money for this.
I don't know. How I got in the Meghan Meyer Foundation is really pretty much an open book. I don't know if I ever told the story that I did it because I never bullied anybody in high school. Mm. But there were two guys that got mercifully bullied like every fucking day. Mm-hmm. And it acted like it didn't bother them. You know, people come and knock the books out of their hand and call them freaks, and mm-hmm. they would just pick up their books and walk away. But I saw them in the bathroom one day afterwards, and they were just both crying. And I didn't do shit. That stayed with me forever.
Really?
That I never said anything. I never told the people, why don't you stop it, man?
Right.
Don't bully them. What the fuck is your problem, man? They're human beings. I never did anything.
And that bothered you. Do you carry that with you?
It bothered me for a long time. To the point where when I joined the Meghan Meyer Foundation, I actually found them both on Facebook and asked them if they'd have lunch. Mm-hmm. And took them both to lunch, and they had no idea what I wanted to talk about. They just said, hey, I want to catch up from high school. And they were both normal, turned out normal, thank God. They're both married with kids and great jobs. And we met, and they're still friends to this day. They both are. And we had lunch, and I said, God, I just want to tell you that I'm sorry for what happened to you in high school.
What'd they say?
And I never stood up for you guys. I never stopped, and I hated that about myself, and I joined this foundation just to stop bullying. And a lot of it has to do with what you guys went through, and I didn't do anything. I'm just as guilty as the people that bullied you. They said, God, we'd forgotten all about that. Mm. You know, and I said, thank God you did. It sticks with people forever, a lot of it. He goes, no, it's just high school, but we got through it, and thank you for saying that. You know,
that's so nice.
That made me feel, so that's why I got with the Meghan Meyer Foundation, because that story, I don't know what else you want, man. You could have learned some questions, Steve. You could have sent me some questions.
Well, and I think the thing that, we aren't going to really talk details on, but the thing that you were alluding to is somebody has been calling you a bully in other things.
Well, yeah, he won't hear this.
And sending all of us emails to try and, like, quote unquote, out you or something as being like a predator. And I mean, all jokes aside, I like predator is not a word that I associate you with.
No.
And I, you know, and bullying, I mean, you've stuck up for me a time or two online when people start getting shitty. And, you know, so I like that it runs deep in your heart that you want to stand up for other people. And I think that that's really admirable. What some parting words for Steve? What is your life motto?
Just. Be good to yourself, be good to other people, and just keep your family close. I mean, if nothing else in life, if you got your family, you can pretty much get through anything. I know if I ever became homeless, I have a place to live. Mm-hmm. If I ever need somebody to talk to, I know where I can reach my family. There's just stop with the spam. Yeah, so just treat people nice. Treat people the way you don't want to be treated. There's no reason to be a dick. You know, you can be nice to people and still have a great life. You don't have to come across as some hard ass all
right.
the time. Just be nice to people and people will be nice to you.
All right, this concludes the Iggy story for Sound Story.
The next one you do, actually, you'll interview somebody interesting who maybe won a Purple Heart or, you know, fought in World War II and met Mickey Mantle and met Babe Ruth and two people you don't know who I'm talking about. But,
I hope so.
Had 10 kids who,
and didn't
you know,
take their pants off at the new
this
beach.
Is just the most boring thing. You did a great job.
Well, thanks.
You didn't make me cry. I figured you'd try to get something out of me to make me cry, but you did a good job. You're going to be perfect for the rest of the ones you do after me.
Thank you, Iggy.
I was just a test animal.
All right, Steve. There it is. Sorry there's not more dirt, but I hope
if you want
enjoyed.
Dirt, call me, buddy. You got my number. I'll give you some dirt. I didn't know what you wanted to talk about, and I don't want to make Learn feel uncomfortable with some of the stuff that I've done in my life. So
yeah, and you could save some money, too.
Yeah, if you want dirt, just call me. I'll give you the rest of it. But
the longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.